How did you get around this week? Did you walk, cycle, drive? I did a few days, I must admit. Guilty as charged. Or perhaps you jumped on the bus or the train. There really is nothing, however, more frustrating than a train that is late or doesn't arrive at all. But beyond our personal irritation, effective scheduling and energy-efficient driving can have a major impact on minimising energy use and so much more. And it's particularly pertinent as our cities and our populations continue to grow. And that is where my first guest today comes into the picture. From the University of South Australia, I'm joined by mathematician Dr. Amy Albrecht. Welcome.
Thanks, Fenella. Great to be with you.
So, Amy, tell me a bit about your background and your fascination and your interest in the mathematics of scheduling.
I work in an area called operations research, so it just uses a whole bunch of different mathematical techniques to help in making good decisions for real-world problems that are constrained in some way, typically by limited resources. In train scheduling, the timetables are typically constructed manually, so a person sits down with a large sheet of paper and takes them typically 6 to 8 weeks to construct a train timetable. And in that time, they don't really investigate lots of different alternatives. So they'll come up with one solution and that will be the solution that they use. And so our work has been to automate that process so it's quicker, but to also explore other alternatives.
And what are some of those alternatives? How have you gone about to automate that process that takes a human being, as you say, 6 weeks to devise?
So it's about encapsulating the constraints of the problem. So like I talked about in operations research, there will be limitations on which trains can travel on which sections of track, how many trains are available, what their fuel use is like, their speeds, their capacities. It's about encapsulating all of that information in a mathematical model and then using that model to explore alternative solutions. So we're looking for optimal solutions. We're looking for ones that are better than a human can design in practice.
And getting these types of optimal solutions into practice, I imagine, can be quite hard, particularly if there is a history of humans creating them and coming up with great schedules, of course, that are beautifully designed. So how do you implement some of these great ideas that can improve energy efficiency and also how a driver, well, drives the train?
So in the scheduling work, you're right, the implementation is as difficult a problem as the mathematical theory, so it's not trivial. So when we simulated best practice in our own laboratories, we reduced overall delay of trains by up to 22%. So it would seem natural that you would then want to go and put that into practice. But what we didn't anticipate was this human factor. So the software we designed was a radical departure from the traditional way of doing things. And a train planner will often bend the rules that they don't tell you about, to achieve outcomes that aren't described in their initial brief to you. And they also have a lot of experience that takes time to be encapsulated, and it can be specific things like this train is always late departing from this particular station, or for some reason this train is not allowed on this particular platform. So we need to make sure we don't underestimate this human factor. Train planners should be moving from what we would think of as tedious timetable construction to using their expertise to evaluate which of the options we present them with is the best one to implement.
Obviously, the human factor is incredibly important. That anecdotal, that historical knowledge, in combination with the mathematical algorithms that you can come up with to make this much more efficient, so the trains are more reliable, you can reduce congestion. How do you combine those two?
With a lot of conversations in front of a whiteboard thrashing things out, basically. So we've learnt that the iterative approach is best. We go in, we listen, we try and encapsulate everything they're telling us, we go and do the mathematics, we bring back a solution and say, what do you think of this? And they say, well, we would have done it like this, or that's something we hadn't thought of, and then we go away and refine our model. The things that they hadn't thought of are our better schedules, the ones that are being created using mathematical techniques, but they look at them and say, these don't have the features that we would want in a timetable. So they're giving us more information that we then go back and put into our model.
One of the other amazing things that you've been involved with is what's called the Energy Miser in-cab advice system. Describe what this is for me.
So this is a device that sits in the cab of a train that advises the driver on how to drive the trains so that they minimise their energy use and still arrive on time. When a driver's in a cab, they're controlling the level of power or the braking that's being applied at a particular location. Our mathematical algorithms find the optimal level of control that they should apply at each point along the journey to do those two things, arrive on time and minimise their energy use.
And tell me a bit about these levels of control, because there are different energy efficient driving modes, isn't there?
There are, and mathematical analysis shows that of the things you can do, there are only four energy efficient driving strategies. If you accelerate, you should actually accelerate with full power. If you're driving, you should drive at a constant speed. There's also coasting, and then when you need to brake, you should brake using maximum braking effort. On level track, so track without steep hills, you should do those things in that order.
On By Design, my guest today is Dr. Amy Albrecht, who is one of the speakers at this year's WOM Adelaide Planet Talks sessions, and she's speaking on a panel all about climate change and megacities. It's also being hosted by our very own Bernie Hobbs. Now, Amy, there is this other rather extraordinary project that you're involved with that's far away from Australia that aims to reduce maternal death rates in Zimbabwe. So can you tell me about the African solar taxis? What is this project?
So this project came about because UniSA have been doing a lot of work over a number of years in solar vehicles, particularly in solar racing in Australia. And we were approached by a non-government organisation from Zimbabwe. And their particular concern was that a key contributing factor to the highest maternal death rates in the world that Zimbabwe experiences is the difficulty that expectant mothers have in getting from their rural villages to healthcare facilities. When women can't get to these healthcare facilities and they give birth in villages, there are medical complications that can be disastrous if they're not attended to. And actually also the HIV transmission rates are twice as great in villages as in healthcare facilities. So they approached us for a solution, a way to transport these women to what are called waiting mothers' homes a few weeks ahead of their delivery date. We have a group of volunteers, a group called Team Trev, who are actually developing, designing and building a prototype African solar taxi for deployment in Zimbabwe.
And it might seem obvious, Amy, why it's solar, but describe for me why that is important.
Well, actually, initially, we sent a team member to Zimbabwe to meet people and to inspect the roads. So Zimbabwe's remote roads haven't been upgraded since they were put in about 30 years ago. So there are potholes and all sorts of things. So it seems that something like a four-wheel drive would be the most useful vehicle for this application. But it turns out petrol is very expensive and the supply is very sporadic. Instead, women walk large distances to medical facilities or they take an ox cart.
And this is where you come in, and this is using your skills in scheduling, and this is all about charging these cars and their batteries. So how will this work?
What Zimbabwe does have is an abundance of sunshine. So you're right, we're going to have solar charging stations at key locations, and we're going to deploy one or several vehicles. Our work is to decide which women we should collect on a given day and take back to the hospital. But we also need to think about things like when the vehicles will charge. So their range will typically be limited to maybe 80 kilometres, but the distances between the hospital and the village without charging is about 140 kilometres. So we'll need to locate a charging station somewhere along that route so that the vehicle can charge in order to complete this journey.
And what's interesting about this as well is that it's something that anybody is able to read when to charge these vehicles and to get it happening. That's the point, isn't it?
What we're planning on doing is making sure we can find good solutions that can be implemented in practice. We have the vision that someone in a hospital in Zimbabwe is able to say, right, what we should be doing today is collecting these people from these villages, charging at this time, and feel confident that they've made a really good decision.
So it's about empowering people through what is essentially beautiful scheduling and mathematics, yes?
Absolutely, absolutely.
What stage is the African solar taxis at?
So we're currently finished the detailed design and we're building the prototype in the first half of this year. The design and building team are anticipating that we can deploy either in the second half of 2014 or early in 2015. And what I want to make sure is that we know that once we're on the ground, we've made the right scheduling decisions.
And further afield, the ideas that you're raising here, as we start in particular to move towards the future in our cities, moving away from petrol and towards electric vehicles. What are some lessons that we can learn from what's happening here? I mean, for example, if we all drive a car and we go home at night after work and we start to charge it, you know, at 6 o'clock when we get home, surely that will be pretty tough on our grid.
That's exactly right. So we did some analysis that showed that if all passenger transport in Australia was electric, we would only have to increase the capacity of the electricity network by 11%. But what then becomes crucial is the time at which people charge. And so my colleague Peter Pudney and I have done some work to coordinate this smart charging. So when you come home, you perhaps program a device in your house that's connected to your charger that says, this is how much charge I require and this is when I want it by. And a smart algorithm at a street transformer level uses this information and sends signals to different vehicles to manage the charging load.
Amy Albrecht, it's fantastic to speak with you and thank you so much for joining me here on By Design.
Thanks, Vanilla.
Really interesting ideas there from Dr. Amy Albrecht. She is from the University of South Australia. She is a mathematician and you can also see her if you're in Adelaide, speaking at WOMADelaide's Planet Talks. And she's on a panel all about climate change and megacities hosted by the ABC's Bernie Hobbs. You can find some details on our website.
Now available as a Law Report podcast, the son who sued his mum over granddad's will. The judge was scathing about Junior's sense of entitlement to the family farm. Also, plea bargains. Can a prosecutor ever suggest a prison sentence to a judge? And what's it like to be an asylum seeker living in the community but forbidden from working? That's on the Law Report, and you can download or stream this program from the RN website.